Tango Tango Papa 1935, December 7, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you from Marietta, Georgia. So it has been a long while since the last podcast. I think I just looked and it looks like the last one was dated November the 23rd. So I guess it's probably been about 2 weeks. Sorry about that, but in the meantime, I was kind of busy and just didn't get around to it. So I was home for a few days, went back to work. Let's see. Actually, I was supposed to go back to work Saturday, and they sent a load. But it turns out the load didn't end up getting ready to go until Sunday, and so I left home on Sunday, and then that was, I guess, Sunday. It was Sunday yesterday. Sunday, and that load was going to go to Florida. It was going to go to Plant City, Florida. However, in the meantime, I made it. I left, you know, I got to Earl, Arkansas, which isn't too far from Memphis, and that's where I took my break at. And so this morning when I got up, they'd sent a message saying, hey, we have this load, they have a drop yard at West Memphis, Arkansas. Can you drop the load that you have and pick up this other load and deliver it this evening, or in other words, Monday evening at McDonough, Georgia, and so that's what I did. And then afterwards I came to the company yard here at Marietta. It turns out I'm having problems again for the third time really in a row with the fuel-fired bunk heater. They're ESPAR, S-bar heaters. I think it's a European design. I've looked it up in the past. And the idea is that it's, you don't have to idle the truck, and it, uses a little bit of fuel in order to, you know, it burns a little bit of fuel, to provide heat, so that you don't have to idle the truck. Reduces the amount of time that the truck actually has to idle. And that little fuel-fired heater, if, and that's a big if it turns out, if it works properly, uses far less fuel and obviously far less overall wear and tear on the truck. And it produces less pollution, supposedly. If you're using that as opposed to idling the truck in order to maintain a warm temperature in the truck, inside the truck while it's parked. And I don't know. I've had problems really with every truck that I've ever had over the past, I'd say probably three years, that have had, they've had a fuel-fired heater. I've had problems with every single one of them. For whatever reason, they just don't work right. So this one, at first, it worked okay, and then started having problems with it once cold weather struck. And so I got it fixed at there's a company yard in Omaha, Nebraska. Got it fixed there. And then not long after that, it wasn't working, and they fixed it again in the company yard in New Kingston. And that maybe lasted, I'd have to go back and look at the dates, but that maybe lasted a couple of weeks, and the same problem is back. And I can't get the thing to work at all. And so it's got to, you know, it's got to work. Because I'm one of, obviously, I've been pretty lucky. I haven't been in really cold weather. This time last year, I'd actually been in some below zero weather in November. If you've been listening for a long time, you remember that I was in Denver, Colorado in November, and it was actually about, I think, the -1, -2 degrees Fahrenheit. And, of course, it was working then, and that was with this truck. But, so now, if the same thing were to happen now, I would just be SOL, basically. So, it's got to be fixed. But, so in the meantime, I don't trust the thing anymore. Even after if they fix it, then hopefully they'll fix it and it'll continue to work. But in the meantime, I have a heavy-duty sleeping bag that I bought, a number of years ago at Walmart. And I forget what the thing is rated to, but it's one of them that's rated where you can actually sleep on the ground in really cold temperatures. Down to, I don't remember what the specification was, but it turned out that it was just really too efficient to really use, and so I ended up putting it in, just kind of stowing it away in a closet at home. But so I dug the thing out and ran it through the washing machine and brought it with me. And so I have that, and it works pretty well. Last night I used it. It was, I think the temperature got down, maybe, I don't know if it got down into the high 30s or maybe low 40s. But at one point, I think about 4:30 in the morning, I woke up and I was sweating. And so I had to uncover for a while. So the thing is very efficient, and I was just using it as a blanket. I wasn't even wrapped up in it. In order to wrap up in this thing and actually zip it up, it would have to be extremely cold, 'cause otherwise it would just be too hot. So I was using it as a blanket, basically, and I stayed plenty warm. But the only problem is getting out of bed the next morning to a cold truck is not the most pleasant thing in the world. Putting on cold clothes. So hopefully they will get the thing repaired. Now, here at Marietta, the last time I looked, it was 50 degrees. I don't know what it's supposed to get down, maybe into the high 40s. So probably what I'll do is kind of flip things around and use this one. I don't know, because it's probably going to be too hot. So I could probably just use the regular one that I have that's not rated very highly. It's like rated for like 50 degrees or whatever. Use it as the blanket and sleep on top of this other one. And probably be a little bit more comfortable, because I don't like waking up in the middle of the night sweating. That's not very pleasant, because sometimes wake up in the middle of the night and the pillow is that I'm that I'm using is all drenched, and then you have to try to flip the pillow over. So that it's it's dry again. There's nothing worse than trying to sleep on a wet surface. So anyhow, while I was home, I did a couple of things. I had my repair guy come over. There's actually two of them. There's a guy and then the guy that works for him. I have 2.5 bathrooms in my house, and vent motors. Each one of those bathrooms has a vent with a vent motor, and those vent motors, all three of them, kind of died sometime back, I really felt like, these need to be replaced because they could potentially be a fire hazard. Let's say if somebody went in there and inadvertently, when they turn the light on, turn on the vent motor and not realize it, that the thing was on, that could potentially be a problem. So those really need to be fixed. And really, for example, when I'm taking a shower, it's really thing, or especially a shower, makes a lot of humidity, and really need to have a functioning vent motor in all of those bathrooms. So they were able to replace two of them. They found two different wherever they stopped at to buy the parts before they came to my house. They found two motors, and so they were able to repair two of them, and so that leaves one. And then also so what I ended up doing is ordering another motor, whichever motor they told me, found one on Amazon. And then also I ordered a range hood that will go over my kitchen stove. And the problem that I had, the range hood that is 42 inches, which is a standard size. However, that's not a size that is sold commonly in a place like Home Depot or Lowe's or even independent appliance dealers. Most of the ones they sell are just 30 inches. That's what they have in stock. And if you want some other size, you basically have to order it. So I ordered a range hood from Amazon, and so I got that. Those came Friday, the day before I was to go back to work. Those did show up, and so I got the 42-inch range hood, and that third motor. And so whenever I go home again, I'm due home again on the 19th to begin my vacation, and I'm taking my vacation time, so I'll be off from December 19, and I think I'm due to go back to work on January 12th. So, have them come back, and they can install that final motor, and then the range hood. Now, I did also, ended up having to order a new cook stove. The cook stove that I have, of course, I'm on propane, so it's gas. And the cook stove that I have, the burners on it work just fine. The thing's about 20 years old. It's as old as the house is. I've had the house now about 20 years. But the problem is that some time back, the oven seemed to lose its ability to modulate the temperature. So, in other words, let's say you were going to bake something at 350 degrees for so many minutes. Well, what you have to do is, if you're going to bake something, you have to really pay attention to what you're doing, because and kind of really watch what's happening, because it seems like it's either all or nothing. So in other words, it whatever the maximum temperature that it will go to, that's what it does, and it just stays there. It can't kind of stop and start the flame as it normally would in order to regulate the temperature. So I don't know exactly how that works, but it's some sort of a mechanical regulator. And so I felt it was probably just time to go ahead, especially while I'm still working, go ahead and just replace that cook stove. And my idea is basically, while I'm still working, of course I don't have any plans on retiring anytime soon. I'm 60 years old now, and so the retirement, obviously I'm gonna have to retire at some point, and that's sort of beginning to loom a little bit. And so might as well go ahead and get that house in as good a shape as I possibly can. And that way, even though I don't have any plans on retiring anytime soon, if something were to change, let's say my health were to, I'm good in decent health, but let's say that it were to suddenly change and I would find myself, for whatever reason, because of, let's say, a health problem, suddenly unable to work anymore, at least if I have the house paid off and in as good a shape as I possibly can, I'm in a lot better position than I would be if I just let things go, let the house go, and then suddenly found myself without an income, or being able to work and have the income I'm used to. Then I'd be, in a much worse position. So my idea is to really put that house in as good a shape as I can and get every possible little thing in good condition. And then go ahead. I've got about probably 10 more payments to make, I figure. And then the mortgage will be paid off, and but I have every intention to continue to work into the foreseeable future. Don't know how long, but that just sort of again kind of depends on my health, and it also depends on to a certain extent on the regulations that they keep imposing, because at some point I may decide that it's just not worth it anymore, and it would be possible that I could find some other job that didn't pay as much but wouldn't be as heavily regulated as the trucking is. And it's becoming more and more onerous with the regulations, and so far so good. Again, I don't have any health problems, and that seems to be one of the areas where they're really trying to ratchet things down. Is they're catching a lot of people with different types of health problems and making them ineligible to have a commercial driver's license, which I guess that's fine if they do that, because there are people that you don't want someone that's going to have a heart attack and crash into somebody else, or those types of things, or somebody that would have, let's say, they would suddenly have some sort of a seizure or whatever else. You want to try to obviously weed that out, as busy as the roads are, as much traffic as there is today, and that seems to always be increasing. The volume of traffic always seems to kind of increase, so I can understand why they would want to do that. But some of the regulations can, let's say, for example, I was Ian had sent me an article it was talking about, I think, what was it, in 2016 maybe, that by some date a commercial driver will no longer have to carry a medical card, because that's going to supposedly that's going to be in some national electronic database, and so all they have to do is kind of prove you give them your driver's license, I guess, and they can just instantly look up, have instant access to your the fact that you passed your medical exam. And, of course, they're going to add a bunch of questions to the medical exam, according to this article I was reading, although they didn't go into details. So I could foresee the day when they say, well, we're just, you're a commercial driver, we're just going to install a chip in you. And in that way, the cop can just scan you, and we'll know if it's you or not. You know, I could see that happening. I can see them trying it. They would love to. There are people that would love to put a chip in everybody. You know, but let's start out with the commercial drivers, because they're kind of unpopular as it is, and we'll just really use this as a test to see how it goes. I could see them doing that. Now, at that point, I would probably just tell them to stick it up their rear end. So I don't think I would stand for that. There are drivers in my company right now that have cameras aimed at them. They've got a camera, kind of a dash cam type thing, which I have a dash cam of my own. It's aimed out my front window. And primarily the reason I have it is because sometimes some very interesting things can happen in front of my truck. And occasionally I just make kind of different YouTube videos, kind of speed things up, and it's just a nice thing to have, as far as I'm concerned. But what they're doing with these, and I don't know how many drivers they have that they've actually installed these cameras in their trucks, but it's a two-way camera. And so it's aimed not only out at the road, but it's also aimed at the driver. And then, according to what they say, if there's an accident, it's recording a continuous loop. And so if there's an accident, or if the driver has to suddenly slam the brakes on, or or if the company just decides they're going to just randomly look at the driver, this is called DriveCam. And I think there's a drive cam company, and if I ever think about it, I probably should try looking them up on the internet. There's drive cam is the name of it, but at least what my company is using. But so they can just, if they want to look in, they can, and kind of just see what you're doing. So on the one hand, they can say, well, it's our truck, and you're driving our truck, and we have a right to look at you. But on the other hand, that's kind of an invasion of privacy. Now, how they're getting drivers to accept this is at least with my company, they're finding drivers that have kind of marginal, they're sort of marginal driving records. Maybe they've had some accidents and number of different violations, too many speeding tickets, for example. And so they're sort of using that as kind of leverage to their kind of bad driving record as leverage to sort of force them to accept this camera. And so they don't have to, they can either, obviously they don't have to continue working, but most of them, I think, end up kind of accepting it. And according to the company, at least what the company says, is that these drivers have shown improvement after the camera's there. So they kind of know that they're being monitored closely, and they sort of change their behavior. And I'm sure, there are plenty of drivers that, and I'm talking about commercial truck drivers, that follow too closely. I see it every day. Follow too closely, that's probably one of the biggest things, is that really is probably the biggest thing, is following too closely. I see that happen a lot, and the problem with that is that a car will, you know, whatever the stopping distance a car has, a truck, a loaded truck, loaded, you know, one that's close to 80,000 pounds going down the road, takes three times the stopping distance of a car. And of course, if you reduce the load, then that's, you know, it's going to stop a little sooner if you get rid of some of the momentum, if it's a lighter load. But even an empty truck is going to, it requires much more stopping distance than a car does, a car or a pickup. So I am constantly, that's one of the things I just stay back away from the vehicles in front of me. Because let's say that I'm driving along and there's stoplights. Okay, well, if somebody cuts in front of me in a car or a pickup, and then the light changes and they hit their brakes so that they don't run the light, well, if I'm kind of barreling along, I can find myself all of suddenly in a position where someone is abruptly stopping in front of me, and I don't have this, the same. I have a much longer stopping distance than they do, and so therefore, what would happen? I end up running over them. So, and then whose fault is that? Well, it's my fault because they stopped in front. I was, and of course, if you have a camera, then you can kind of prove that they cut you off or whatever. But I don't want to be in that position. I could, as a truck driver, earning a living, I can be in the right and have all kinds of accidents. But if I have all kinds of accidents, I'm not going to be a truck driver very long. Even if I'm perfectly legal. That's what's wrong with the Google car, the self-driving car idea, is that it can be perfectly in the right, and yet it's got a pretty high accident rate. If I had the number of accidents that the Google car has at the rate that it has, I wouldn't be driving a truck right now. So there are certain things that you can be perfectly in the right from a legal standpoint, and yet still find yourself in a bad situation. But then, you know, so, but they're using these cameras to kind of force these drivers to change their behavior, and in that sense, I can understand the company doing that. Now, I think that eventually, what the stuff is always a bottomless pit. So if they get one thing, then they want something else, and so it's kind of like hoarding behavior. You can never have enough, whether you're a government regulator or you're collecting whatever it is that you collect. There are some people that hoard. I think that, you know, it's not quite as in vogue as it once was, but people would hoard MP3 files off of, you know, the music, the download the music off of the illegal sites, you know, the BitTorrent thing. That is kind of going away to a certain extent. I just read an article that was saying at one time BitTorrent was taking about one-third of the bandwidth on the internet, and that has now dropped to about 5%. So, you know, because of the people are just getting, you know, they've decided they'd go for things like streaming music and pay for a streaming service. So, behavior can change, but the hoarding behavior, you know, the regulations are never enough. If they come up with something, then they'll always come up with something else. So eventually I think they're going to have cameras in every truck, but that's not going to be enough. And then they're probably, I could foresee a day when they decide, well, we're not going to rely on this driver's license that is issued by a state. We'll just implant a chip in you, and then that way we can just, the enforcement people can just scan the chip, and we'll know who you are. Or we can just do it as you drive through. We won't even have to stop you. It would be so much safer for the highway patrol or whoever it is, the enforcement people, the Department of Transportation enforcement people, if they could just scan you at a distance. And they could know that you're perfectly legal or not. And so it's that kind of thing is a bottomless pit. So I could see that happening, instead of asking for your papers, because that's basically what they're doing. Let's see your papers. Papers, please. Put a chip in everybody. And then you've got their electronic papers. They're right there. But that's, of course, that's not going to be enough. And they'll have to do something else, because then ultimately they want to be able to, they'll have to. Because, I know how this stuff works. They would want to know what you're thinking. What are you thinking? Any illegal thoughts? And that's exactly where it goes. There was a other story that I saw, and I actually posted a link to it on Facebook. So the there was this woman somewhere, and I don't know if the article ever really said where it was, or if it did, I don't remember. I'm sure it probably did. But there's this woman that was involved in a hit and run. She'd apparently hit a couple of vehicles and then drove off. But she was thinking she was getting away. But in the meantime, she had a vehicle. Some of the newer vehicles, if the vehicle senses that it's been involved in an accident, because it's got accelerometers and, if it decides that it's been involved in an accident, the vehicle automatically calls the police department and it reports its make. This is the vehicle doing it. It reports its make and its model and its location. And so apparently the police called her or somehow, and she said, "Oh, everything's fine," but of course it wasn't. There were a couple of different vehicles that she was in, that she had actually hit, and so she ended up getting arrested and probably sent to jail. So moral of the story is, as I've said for years, if you don't do the right thing naturally, if that doesn't come to you naturally, technology will come along after the fact, because you don't have any control. Somebody's going to come along, some dictatorship is going to come along after the fact, using technology to force you to do the right thing. And so, in that case, why not? It's kind of like the people that buy the buy here, pay here type of car, and dealership has remote control cellular device that if two or three days after the payment you fail to make the payment, they just shut the thing down. Of course, they know where it's at, and they can just turn your car off because you haven't made the payments. I think that's a brilliant use of technology. And so if you don't do the right thing, then you can be forced to do the right thing. So that's basically what a lot of this revolves around. But so I would probably, if they came along and they said, before I retire, they said, you have to have this camera aimed at you, I would probably go along with it. If I had to, I probably would. Now, if it came to the point where they said, well, you have to have this embedded chip so we can identify you, that is probably, I would probably balk at that. I don't think I would accept that. So, and I don't think that's going to happen. That's probably not going to happen. I'm sure there's people that are already thinking about this. That's probably not going to happen in the foreseeable future. But at some point it will. If this keeps going along the same way, it will. That will happen. And again, you can use commercial drivers, because commercial drivers don't have a very good public image. And people hate trucks. They hate the idea that the truck is in front of them, slowing them down or whatever. And, you know, kind of stupidly not realizing that if it weren't for those trucks on the road, that they wouldn't have a life. They wouldn't be able to exist. People don't have a clue. Where do you think all your stuff comes from? Where do you think all of the things that make your daily life possible, where do you think all that stuff comes from? Does it just magically appear in the supermarket or in the Best Buy or wherever it is? Of course, you know, that's what a lot of people, I think that's what they think. They don't have a clue. And then the other thing is people, we got to get rid of oil. We're oil people. If it weren't for oil, most of us wouldn't exist. Our lives wouldn't even be possible were it not for oil. And the continued burning of so-called fossil fuels. Wouldn't even be possible. We wouldn't even be here. So in a sense, the idea, we're gonna wean ourselves off. We got this horrible habit. We're hooked on oil, as if it's some sort of a drug or something. That's suicidal. It's suicidal thinking. And of course, there's a lot of people that have suicidal thoughts. Probably a lot more than you realize. Probably a lot of the people around you, certainly the people around you, there are plenty of them that have suicidal thoughts. And it really revolves around the fact that if you're separated from who you could have been, starting with your parents and then kind of moving on into the schools, into the school system, the nationalized public school system, then if you kind of take that away, what is there to live for? What is there to live? Are you going to pleasure yourself to death? Because the people that really exist for pleasure and they think pleasure is happiness, those people really do die at a much younger age. The only thing that really gives any satisfaction at all, that's worth anything, revolves around building your character, finding answers to the question, why do I exist? You know, do you exist to eat? Do you exist to watch your favorite television series? Is that why you exist? That's a pretty, you know, in the end, as I've said many times, there's nothing wrong per se with the concept of entertainment, but if that's your if that's what you think is the end point, then that's pretty empty. The more you do it, the emptier it becomes. And so the school system has encouraged this. We end up with on earth as it is in hell. And if you don't believe me and you think, well, it's, you know, come up with all kinds of excuses as to why the public school system is really a good thing. What about the, you know, look at the what's going on with the University of Missouri and other universities where you have these college kids, so-called college kids. They're supposedly adults, and they're having their microaggressions, and they want their safe spaces. And they have the emotional maturity level of probably a 3-year-old. So, anyway, I have a voice file sent to me by Joel. And he sent this, a few days ago while I was home, and I was kept thinking, well, I'll record a podcast, but I never did get around to it, so got around to it now. So anyway, here I haven't listened to this at all, so except for the very first part of it, so here is Joel.
I haven't heard Tom in a while. Note. Seems like every time I box you, you end up doing a podcast, which is fine. If I can help you at least give you something to talk about. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, I guess, huh? Anyway, kind of on to something how, you know, I know we kind of feel the same way about this kind of a subject, but yesterday was hashtag Giving Tuesday. Hashtag. Anyway, and I guess it's a day for people to say, hey, I'm okay, you're okay, because I gave. You know, I give to charity all the time. I donate money as well as myself for multiple charities over the years. Going to be attending and participating in by purchasing gifts there's a program we get involved with at my church, and that basically give people who are having a rough time a way to have a nice Christmas. It's something we do every year. And it's not just because to make us look good or to feel good, but it's to glorify God. At least that is our motive. And so this Giving Tuesday thing was all started by some group in New York, I guess. And they started in 2012. And of course now it's a big deal and it's all over the media. It's all over Facebook. Facebook even reminded me that yesterday was Giving Tuesday. Well, here's my feeling on charitable giving. I'm very much like you. I don't want to be guilted into giving. I want to give, I'm going to give. And I don't need somebody to tell me when to give because I know I'm supposed to give. I'm supposed to look out and seek out opportunities to help people. That's because that's what God wants us to do. At least, you know, that is my feeling. He wants us to share our blessing. God has blessed us with jobs where we can have more than we need so that we can have, one, a nice life, and two, so that we can help others So it'd be extremely selfish not to give. Okay, but I don't need a special day to give, or a special day to give thanks, really, when you think about it, for Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving for me is more about spending time with family. I mean, of course I give thanks, but I give thanks every day. But it's just, it's more of, to me, it's the, like you say, the you're okay, I'm okay group. You know, look at me, I'm so special and superior. I gave money to this charity. Well, I'd rather, if I'm going to give something, I'm just going to give it. You don't need to advertise that I gave it. I don't even need, you don't, I mean, it doesn't matter to me at all. If you mention my name, that so-and-so gave us X amount of dollars, or through the help of so-and-so, we were able to do it. No, I don't need that, because it's not about me. What I give, is to give, my gift to glorify God. I don't give to glorify myself or to make myself look better or any of that nature. And it really just disturbs me when there's these big social media events where, you know, these companies are saying, oh, you share how many retweets and we'll give blah, blah, blah. No, because that's all about you making money. It's all about you making yourself look good and yourself look better. And instead of just doing the things you're supposed to do.
All right. Well, thank you, Joel. The problem with giving, and it's really kind of also tied up in the problem with receiving. The problem with it is that there's actually a number of problems, but it sort of all relates to a basic problem. And it's possible to give and have kind of two different outcomes. It's possible to give and your own character ends up becoming increased, and that's something that can't really be seen. You know, I don't know that it's even measurable, but your own character could end up becoming increased because if you gave the right way. But at the same time, you give the wrong way, you're doing exactly the same thing, maybe with exactly the same people, but you do it in the wrong way, and your character's decreased. You actually end up worse than you were prior to giving. And so it's less likely, let's say you give somebody something, or you do something, or you give of your time, or whatever it is, if you're not bragging about it to other people or whoever, if you're not bragging about it, then kind of publicly bragging about it, it's less likely that you're going to end up kind of becoming damaged by it from a character, from your own character standpoint. But even at that, it's possible to for us to lie to ourselves and kind of convince ourselves that we're really great people, we're doing this, and you know, so that I think the real measure of it is even if you're kind of doing it and not telling the people around you about it, are you getting a feeling out of it? And that's always a good measure for everything. Are you deriving a feeling out of it? As you sort of imagine in your own mind, you're imagining yourself giving this to whatever charity, or doing this or doing that. Are you deriving some sort of feeling out of it? Because if you are, that's a warning sign that something's going really wrong. You shouldn't get a feeling out of it. And of course, once it becomes public, we're gonna get good feelings out of this. And of course, then these companies that, let's say for example that which one? I think it's Quiznos subs. That every, and they make sure, and they make a point of advertising it. Every dollar that you spend, we give so much of it, so much percentage to charity. And of course, that appeals to people because they can, it makes them sort of feel good about spending their money at Quiznos because it, by extension, they're sort of being good too, and so it's sort of a way of making that into a brand, so it's got a couple of elements to it. But if you have to brag on what you're doing like that, if you're a company, it really ends up being a way of manipulating the public. If you're making that the fact that you're giving into some sort of a marketing campaign or a marketing strategy, then it ruins it, and it not only damages the company and damages the people in the company because they're believing a lie that we're really a great organization because look at what we're doing. But at the same time, it sort of encourages, it damages the customers, the people that sort of buy into the lie that they're really good. Because it's one thing to, and the reason I say that you shouldn't get a feeling out of it, you get a good feeling, you get a good feeling out of, I did the right thing and I'm going to get a good feeling. Are you God? Because that's basically when you feel good, what are you doing? You're really feeling God. I'm God. Only God, God can have feelings, Human beings, we shouldn't be deriving feelings out of anything, really. And certainly our behaviors. Or once we start interacting with other people socially, and then it kind of turns into a big ego massage. you end up with a really a bad outcome, but it destroys your own character. So that's the reason why should you be worried about sin? Whether you should sin or not sin or et cetera, et cetera. Why should you worry about that? Because you're destroying your own character. It's not, you're not raking up brownie points, trying to accumulate brownie points or whatever. It's all about your own character and the relationship that you have with your creator. And that's not something that's, it's not what people think it is. It really isn't. The relationship that you have with your creator is more of, it's a much more direct thing, than most people, I think, realize. Is it? It's a very, and words kind of fall apart talking about this. It's the most direct thing that you can imagine, because God, whether you want to believe it or not, our Creator, is behind every single atom, every single particle in this universe exists at our Creator, kind of his ongoing whatever it is that he is doing to make it exist. Because there's a line somewhere, and I don't know, I can't I don't recall which book it's in. It may even be in the Bible. I'm not really sure about it. Right now I just don't remember. But it's something to the effect that if God took his hand away, the universe would basically cease to exist. And I believe that's absolutely true. So if the universe exists because God is causing it to all of the spins to spin, and everything's just perfect as far as they say that if things were just off just as the tiniest of percent, then nothing would matter wouldn't exist as we know it, or our universe wouldn't exist as we know it. So everything's just precisely tuned. So if God took his hand away, it would all cease to exist. So with that in mind, what is it? You know, in our physical existence, we have a physical existence that would all cease to exist. The only reason it exists is because our Creator keeps it existing. What is it that gives us awareness? What is it that animates us? Again, it goes back to our Creator. Then you have the idea, well, we as human beings, God, if you were God and you could create all, animals and all these different things, they are what they are, and they don't have any choice. You pick any animal, the plant, they have no choice in what they are. They just are. They are what they are, and that's that. Human beings have a choice. We have a choice, and we don't have to be we don't have to follow an instinct in the same way that an animal has to follow, or a plant. The programming. And so therefore we as human beings have a choice. And so but we can we you know with that choice comes a danger that we'll and of course we make the we're sort of born into the wrong choice, being born in sin. I know there are people that don't like that concept and want to just toss it away. Well, that's fine. Go, listen to some other podcast. Don't bother me, because you're not gonna argue with me and change my mind about this. Because I've kind of see things the way I see them, and there is this concept of being born in sin, and I for a long time I didn't understand it, but over the years I've come to understand what it actually means, and it means that we're sort of born separated from our Creator, and because you had the first original pair of human beings and they fell, and I think that if God continued to create, had a Garden of Eden, and he continued to put a pair of human beings out there, that every single one of them would have failed. And so then what do you do then? Well, you have the offspring of those human beings. And of course, biologically, we can be traced back. You watch a lot. I watch a lot of documentaries. I'm especially interested in documentaries about DNA, how it works. And every human being alive, all the billions of human beings alive today, can be traced back to basically one father. Don't know how many people realize that, but basically we can be traced, that the DNA can be traced back. And there was basically one father. Of course, that's, you have the Adam and Eve story. And so there was an original pair. But we, the offspring, that's where salvation comes in. We can be saved from we're sort of born into this system and we can be saved from it. Saved from the choice. We, so, you know, the kind of a, we're sort of born into a choiceless choice. So, you know, if you don't want to believe that, then, you know, pleasures, you know, eat, you know, have at it, you know, eat as much as you want, drink as much as you want, sex as much as you want, have at it, go for it. There are plenty of other people that'll join you. So, but there is this concept of being born in sin and we can be saved from it. But we have to sort of have our nose rubbed in what we have to want to know. You have to want to know what it is. What is sin? What does that really mean? You know, do I really want to know the truth? Do I want to really know why I exist? What is my real purpose for existing? And so we can end up kind of getting caught up with other people and the idea that we're good people. We're all good people because we all agree that we're good. And we're, oh, look, we're giving and we're doing this and we're doing that. And, you know, we all kind of smile at each other and, you know, kind of make each other feel good. But what good is that? In the end, it doesn't matter. You know, there's a lot of people that that have, you know, they've kind of lied to themselves, and then they have other people that sort of help them along with the lie, and then you have other people that sort of see the lie, and they want to reject the whole thing, and you know that, you know, these people are just deceiving themselves. You know, the atheist, there's plenty of atheist types that kind of come from homes that, you know, where they see the plastic, fake, and phony parents and with their phony religion. And they just want to throw the whole idea out. And we're just, you know, we're just going to be, you know, we're just going to program everybody to be an atheist, and we'll all study science, and somehow we're going to have some, you know, we won't have to work anymore because the machines are going to be doing all the work, and it's going to be utopia. And of course, it's going to be a, that can't exist. And trying to get there, you end up with hell on earth as it is in hell. So, but it really comes down to, how do you look at the world? And do you respond simply because, you know, you're reacting from other people? Just because of all, let's say everybody else believes that, you know, that there is no God and, you know, whatever else, or that it's, you know, that sex, drugs, and rock and roll are good, and or just to kind of pick something out of the air. That the government is good, and basically the, you know, the government is God, and you know, we're going to be able to you know, kind of program utopia. Everybody believes that, and of course that's a lie. You end up with a dictatorship of one sort or another, because if you separate people from who they could have been, then by definition, to the degree you're separated from who you could have been, to that degree you become more suggestible. And but the thing about being suggestible is that when you're suggestible, you lie to yourself, and you that you're living out of your own motivation, and then you find other people that will agree with you that you're, oh, I'm giving because I want to give. And really, you know, you may be giving because someone told you that you should give. And the other people around you are doing it. And so you think, well, I've got to do it too. But then you lie to yourself and you say, well, I did it out of my own motivation. You know, that you got to watch it. You know, the lucky used car, you know, like a used car salesman. The house that I have right now, I bought it primarily because the salesman pressured me, and for the years I couldn't admit that to myself. But I finally, you know, I realized that, you know, I bought the house that I have right now because this, basically because the salesman put the pressure on me, and all of a sudden I flip-flopped. And then I, then of course, the lie kicked in, and I told myself, oh, I really wanted it. I changed my mind. I went in there not wanting it, but then all of a sudden I changed my mind and I wanted it. And it was all of my own choosing, and of course it wasn't. It was, I ended up with what I ended up with because I was under pressure. And so I just, all I had to do was realize it. You know, and as I say, that can kind of be painful. It doesn't change the outcome of it. You know, the house, this house that I have is perfectly fine. But nonetheless, I ended up with it. I ended up buying it because the salesman, you know, he knew how to put the pressure. He applied the pressure and all of a sudden, oops, I flip-flopped. And he knew how to do that. And there's so many different ways that it's possible to manipulate people. And then people will defend, you'll end up defending. Once you've been manipulated, you're, the wrong side of your ego cannot admit that it's been manipulated, and then it's the lie, you know, it instantly kicks in that, oh, I did this because I wanted to. I gave because I wanted to. So, but it's, you know, you have to be able to give and receive without getting a feeling out of it. And, you know, one of the quickest ways that you can determine if somebody's giving for the wrong reasons, you know, when Christmas comes around, I'm not one to give, I don't usually give too many gifts. I just tell people, right, my relatives, right up front, I just don't like this idea of giving because it's the season to give, and so therefore don't give me anything. I don't expect anything from you, but if you give something to me, don't expect anything in return. And for the most part, they respect that, but oftentimes, you know, if you tell people that don't give me anything and they give you something, then they'll kind of feel funny. You make them kind of feel funny because then you sort of force them to realize that, well, hey, I was expecting something in return. Well, hey, but I told you, don't give me anything. I don't give out of pressure. You know, if I want to give something, I'm going to give because I just feel compelled to do it. And not because it's suddenly the giving season. So, anyway, I could go on and on and on. This is an interesting topic. And so thank you, Joel, for sending the voice comments. And by all means, keep them coming. Because I don't know. I enjoy podcasting. But at the same time, it's all about being motivated to do it. And it's really difficult. And I think it's kind of become increasingly difficult over the years for me to just arbitrarily podcast, and, you know, without some sort of interaction kind of taking place, meaningful interaction, not just interaction for the sake of arguing, because that goes nowhere. The point of having an interaction really is to, you know, arrive at the truth. That's really the point of this kind of having a discussion, is to arrive at the truth, and not who's the better debater, who's got the better argument. Even what, you know, it's more important, is the argument right or wrong? And so keep the stuff coming, and all that kind of gives me a motivation to podcast. And that goes for anybody else as well. Unless you're just wanting to, you know, wanting to argue. And if I determine that you just want to argue with me, or, you know, just be arbitrary, and then, you know, I probably won't play your comments, you know, and you may end up feeling slighted. Well, too bad. I told you right up front just now, if you're arguing simply to argue or to just say, and especially say the same things over and over and over again, I'm not going to play the comments. So, and that... But anyway, that doesn't apply to you, Joel. You always come up with some really good comments every time. And like I say, it's difficult to, you know, at some point I feel like I've said everything there is to say. Now, of course, I haven't, obviously. But it becomes hard to, especially I think in the last... Really, probably the last 2 years, and especially the last year, it has become increasingly difficult for me to just kind of end up feeling motivated by whatever, you know, whatever it is that was motivating me to just make a podcast out of something. And but if I have interaction going on, you know, like in the case with your voice files, then that kind of gives me a reason to do it. So, thank you. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and cut this off, get headed to bed. Hope everyone is having a great week so far, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.